Happy Valentine's Day.
I love you. It's all good.
David. Football. Football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
There you heard two voices, two of the most important men in Dave Dameshek's world in 2019. Little boy, football baby growing up, and of course Tom Brady. Sorry, ladies and fellas, as you just heard there, his heart belongs to me. No, my heart belongs. Wait, his heart belongs to me. That's what I mean.
His.
Hi. That's right. He loves me. I'm sorry, Matt Money Smith. Hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. And like I say, you just heard a third man who's important in my world, especially when it comes to talking about the great game of pro football. And perhaps even more importantly, especially on a day like today, Valentine's Day, this weird holiday. It's Matt Money Smith, everybody. What's the poop, fella?
I just had the conversation with my youngest daughter, who is 11, going on 12 in June, about why I reject the capitalist nature of Valentine's Day.
I love it.
Yes, it was great. She was very interested. She's like, you didn't give mom anything? I said, no. I said, this is a corporate devised holiday that herds you into a restaurant, gives you a fixed menu of just mass-produced food, and then shoves you out the door and charges you three times as much. I'm not falling for that crap. And she embraced it. She was like, that makes sense.
Good
I'll
for
take
you.
Out tomorrow. Exactly.
That's what you do. You got to pay it forward, Matt Money Smith. Don't pay your money to the florists right now, unless you heard me vouch for specific floral.
I get behind that 100%.
Yeah, I'm for that. But besides that, it's jive. And I'm pleased to report, man of the year, no one less than the Walter Payton man of the year, Chris Long, also stands on the right side of history, as he indicated on social media earlier this week. Yes, this is a ridiculous holiday. My beef with it is, Matt Money Smith and everyone within the sound of my voice, as usual, is the fact that it is now, it's weird for anyone to mark the calendar like, yes, this is a day of to celebrate love, but also to give only one gender gifts. Only the one gender gets rewarded on this holiday. When's it my turn? You
we
see?
Get nothing. We get nothing. But, except for cold stares and judgment from friends and family. That's
and,
all we get.
And you know what? In a show of solidarity, can we, fellas, come on with the flowers to the office? You know that this shows up everybody else. You know that this makes you look good, but makes the rest of us look bad. Likewise, these Facebook posts. Listen, write a nice note with your hand, mind you. Don't type it in either. Write a nice handwritten note. The world doesn't need to show it. Who's the show for? I think you know who it's for. The world. You're trying to convince the world of something. Cut that crap out.
Love it. Well done. Well done. Precisely delivered. I appreciate that, Dave.
Now,
you and I are simpatico on this.
Now, listen, I love to give flowers, and when the flowers show up randomly, like, oh, it's August 14th. Why? Just because. That's a move. That's
exactly
the way you
right.
make a move in life. You understand? MVP?
No.
You don't get that.
No, I like Valentine's.
Do
it's
you?
Sweet.
Do?
Yeah, it's sweet. Why not?
I'm surprised by that.
Okay.
Like, do you want to go out to a dinner?
I don't want to go out to dinner.
Okay,
I think
good.
That's kind of lame. I don't want to be like, expected to go out to dinner for anything. So we're just going to hang out and like make
okay.
dinner and watch them. But like, I think it's sweet. Why not just like have a day to celebrate love?
What about gifts? Like, are you expecting a gift?
Not a gift. Maybe some candy just because I like candy.
Okay.
But it goes both ways. I got Brett some stuff too. Candies.
Okay.
Ooh,
well, see now that's
that.
See that's
MVP there.
If
mm-hmm.
you're doing that, then that now my position on this important matter can change a little bit. Eddie Spaghetti, I see you did your hair for Valentine's Day. That's not.
I was going to actually, but it's pouring rain outside in Los Angeles.
Are you going to go out? You and the special lady?
That did not just happen.
Out.
I was going to invest all this time in my hair, but because it's pouring rain, I why would I do that?
Yeah.
My hair will get messed up with
yeah.
all this rain.
Exactly. Well, money. I didn't want to dress up because if you do the hair, you got to look a little bit nicer, wear better clothes. Like today it's pouring out. I'm just going to wear like my Timberlands and like to, you know, I don't want to wear nice shoes and get all soaked.
Your rain clothes. You're in galoshes.
I'm in rain clothes. Exactly. So I just didn't feel like doing my hair today. But yeah, we're going out. we're doing all you could eat sushi, which is different than going to those price fixed, you know, restaurants where their head chef takes the day off because he doesn't need to work on a day like this. So we're going to do some like fun, but not as like fancy like everyone else.
You know, it occurs to me, Spaghetti, by the way, go back and listen, Matt Money Smith and everybody else within the sound of my voice, to the podcast from earlier this week. We were joined by David Carr, and we really did a deep dive just before the Flacco deal that I want to talk about. But we did a deep dive on where a lot of these big name QBs are going to land. And I talk about in an ongoing way, the saturation of the NFL QB 2019. We're now fixed just about. We have a couple more locations. Washington needs a new QB at this point, Jacksonville and Miami. And at that point, we are at full saturation money. 32 teams will have halfway decent QBs. I know we can get cynical about how good Andy Dalton is, but they're all reasonable QBs. They're not some bum under center on any NFL team. As soon as this, once Nick Foles lands and a couple other names, we're going to be all set.
Are we, have we reached the point, and I'm kind of just following what you just said there, Dave, have we now reached a point where we might have capable quarterbacks not playing football? Do we have that in our future? I think we do, right?
We have duplication, because here's what's going to happen, and we can talk. I just want to say, get David Carr, and the other thing I wanted to tell you, Matt Money Smith, is that it was revealed that both David Carr and Eddie Spaghetti both like to use hair dryers. Do you use a hair dryer on your hair?
I don't use a hair dryer. I said that to you. I've never used one.
I thought you did say you did.
No, you made fun of. I said I take between 10 and 15 minutes with the hair.
Oh, that's still
Carr said. Yeah, it is. It is too long.
That might be even weirder. But okay, if it takes 15 minutes, then you should change the way you're doing it. I mean, what gives? And by the way,
so I'm not good at it.
Especially, it'd be one thing if you when you walked out, you looked like Don Draper circa 68, but instead you look like this. I mean, this is what 15 minutes yields.
Neck down,
it ain't worth it.
Neck down is because of the diet, but my hair is because I'm not good at doing it. So then if I'm going to do it, I don't want it to look stupid. That's why it takes so long.
What do you have to do? Like, if you said 15 minutes, I would automatically.
I just screw it up.
You don't have long hair.
No,
like
I just screw it up.
It would be hair dryer. What do you mean, screw it up?
I have like a couple weird cowlicks. I have a weird hair. Like the part where I part it sometimes gets all screwed up. I'm not good at it.
Ooh.
Spaghetti. I don't know what the
spaghetti.
I don't know what the stakes would be, but would you be willing to submit if you lost whatever our little non-monetary wager would be? Would you be willing to submit to a perm?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a
good
shame. I do whatever.
Great. You versus Emma.
It's
loser
content.
Has to get a perm. Are you in
Ooh,
MVP?
I like it.
I'm in.
You'll do. Hey, listen. You think I like it. Jive? You've come to the wrong place, sis.
It's very funny. I'm down for a joke.
Okay, but you'll get a perm if you lose?
Yeah.
Don't play games.
Okay.
All right. This is no game.
Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic.
This is the game of life. Is that what's going on here?
Is there any way to capture the scent of perm into a scratch and sniff sticker so we could share it with everybody of how Emma or Eddie smell for like the first 3 days of their brand new perm?
That smell reminds me of my youth going with Mo Damashek to the place and like, ugh, can't be worth whatever's going on in here. Whatever happens on the other, can't be worth it. So yes, go back and listen to that one because along with talking about hairstyling, David Carr really has some insightful stuff about the QBs and the state of these QBs who very often, some guys take the slings and arrows on a daily basis, on a perennial basis. Other guys seem immune to being accused of maybe not being as good as they once were. David Carr takes the gloves off and gets into some of the big name QBs around pro football. Money, Joe Flacco is one of those guys by virtue of winning that Super Bowl, what was it, 6 years ago now? And people keep hanging their hat on that. If you're a glass half full guy, the rest of the world seems to say that was the anomaly. The decade of work otherwise is what resonates and how good he's going to be in 2019. How say you, Joe Flacco to the Broncos? Good move?
I thought our old colleague and close friend Matt Harmon had the tweet of the century when it came to that decision, and it had the old space ghost, two buttons in front of him, and John Elway's face superimposed on old space ghost, and one button read, bad QB, and the other button read, different bad QB. I think that has kind of been the John Elway era, save Peyton Manning decided he was going to come do it for a few years. I mean, we have the perfect test case, right? Last year, exact same team, exact same supporting cast, and you have a Super Bowl winning, highest paid at one point in his career player in the NFL guiding the offense, and then you have a rookie out of a supposedly unconventional for the NFL offense, which one of them performed better and led his team into the playoffs, and which one had a sub 500 record? It just, I don't get it. I'm with you. I mean, you have the Super Bowl run was an anomaly. The postseason runs are an anomaly from what he has put on paper as his resume for the last 10 years.
I agree, but on the other side of this, first of all, I think Elway, here's his success. His last, 4 years or so includes, to talk about how fast things move and how quickly society can turn on even John Elway. John Elway, the legend QB, he wins a Super Bowl in 50, and everybody's like, boy, his tenure is stained. It's like, well, he won right. The Super Bowl. It wasn't that bad. But anyway, since then, and by the way, even that year, everybody kind of forgets about the Brock Osweiler stretch there. It was mix and match. It was kitchen sink. They win the Super Bowl, and I think with that experience, then Elway says, well, we'll do the same thing. We'll just have multiple QBs. Not 1 + 1 = 0, and I think Elway maybe learned that in this weird QB conundrum. It's the QB paradox. You can't just have Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian, and then they get Chad Kelly, and who am I for? Oh, and they still had Osweiler. It's like, well, one of those guys will work out. You know, something good will happen here. No, you went 5-11. So then they say, no, let's just give it to Case Keenum, a savvy vet. That's what we need. That didn't work. I suspect that he's going to go back to the old approach. I think he's going to draft Kyler Murray or maybe Drew Locke seems like the right kind of guy. Looking at Drew Locke lately, it feels to me like I could see him doing that, which as a side note or as a related conversation, this is the other thing I don't like. As to your point, are we now going to have too many good QBs? Are we going to have 33 plus good quarterbacks walking the planet Earth and only 32 spots for them to play in? I bet you Denver's going to do that, and the Giants are going to take Dwayne Haskins to back up Eli Manning. Both of these are bad ideas. Choose one QB and roll that way. How say you?
Well, then I think you also have Jacksonville in there, right? I mean, they're, I would assume, clearly going to be in the quarterback conversation. And there now you have those three guys, right? Haskins, Locke, I assume Daniel Jones is in there, and Kyler Murray. I mean, there's your first four. I mean, those are your four likely first-round selections at that position. And where they fall and who trades up, because you know one of them is not going to last until the 20s. So, I mean, by the time you get to, I think it's, 13 for the Dolphins, I would imagine all four of those guys are going to be gone.
Of course. By the way, I keep saying it, but I want to say it again. Stop with the nonsense about somebody, Kyler Murray or anybody else, slip into the third. Come on. He's going in there. These guys go in the first round. This might be the last year, though, that anybody reaches to do that based on what we're saying, that I think that we are about to achieve saturation and people won't have to reach.
Yeah, I think back to your Elway, you know, conversation. I think the problem is, you know, one, it's not only the decisions he made, but the decisions that, you know, he tried to make and didn't work out. You know, I mean, I think we forget that, you know, he traded. Did he trade up or did he just straight draft Paxton Lynch? I feel like he traded up to get Paxton Lynch.
That sounds right. I remember that got wonky that the Cowboys were going to grab him. And that sounds familiar.
I think that's what happened. So not only did you draft Paxton, but I feel like they traded up to whatever, right? So you basically invest a first rounder in that guy. You tried to sign Brock Osweiler. You wanted to sign Brock Osweiler to a $50 to $70 million deal. You thought that was his, you thought that he was worth that. So I guess that's kind of that's my issue. It's like clearly he has got issues trying to evaluate that position. If you can't get that right and you refuse to take any outside conversation, or at least from the people that are capable in your organization that reportedly pushed back on the Case Keenum thing, and they're like, I don't know about this. Hmm. Don't tell me my business, devil person. I'm John Elway. I know how to evaluate quarterbacks, and you end up with that. I think that's where a lot of the conversation is coming in. Like, hey, this guy either has to start kind of checking himself and involving other opinions with this particular position, or he's got to move on because it's clearly not working and it's the most important position on the planet of any sport.
It's ironic, but it's kind of the it's the Ted Williams syndrome. Certain superhumans just can't evaluate mortal men. They can't, you know. Ted Williams, like, well, do like, hey, Skip, how do I hit as good as you? Like, just like, you see how I did it? You should do some of that. Like, what? I don't know what you're,
right.
I don't know what John Elway looks at and sees. I think the only thing he can I mean, the success that he had was with Peyton Manning, and that's another all-time
that's
great.
It.
Maybe that's what he needs to do is, you know, I was short of doing that. He did try to get Kaepernick a couple of years, too, although they didn't offer him starting money, if I remember that correctly. That would be an interesting fit, and it's why I kind of think Kyler Murray makes some sense there, too, especially now that you have Flacco. Imagine if poor Flacco, if I'm right, that they do double down now and use that seventh overall for another quarterback. Like, I just left the Ravens in the same. Now you're doing, I gotta train this guy now, too?
It would probably be apropos for Flacco, especially. Look, I think the idea behind Flacco isn't this is going to be an elite QB that wins us games. It's here is a pretty median level quarterback who has played on teams with good defenses that regularly wins between 9 and 12 games, right? Or I should say 8 and 12 games is kind of your Joe Flacco. When you've got a really good defense on the other side of the ball, it seems as though more often than not, the Ravens were either in the postseason or in weeks 15, 16, and 17, we're playing for a berth in the postseason.
I completely agree that the formula makes sense.
Well,
what the Ravens have done successfully, we're able to do here. We're going to run a lot of play action. Munchak will hopefully help that offensive line a little bit. What they should do is trade down and get a couple offensive linemen for Munchak to train up a little
terrible.
Bit. Right. And then you have, I mean, if you think about it, if Flacco, if it's all play action and the defense dominates and you have those two nice young runners from last year and you have Cortland Sutton, now all of a sudden, if the offensive line doesn't stink, that should be a halfway decent team. They just happen to be in a rugged division.
That's the problem. Right. And that's I guess, where you have to now ask yourself the question. Okay, so now you got Joe Flacco. What is it that you think you're playing for? If you feel like the Chargers and the Chiefs are, I don't want to say leaps and bounds, but I mean, look, the Broncos beat the Chargers last year. The Broncos should have beat the Chiefs last year. Remember, were it not for such a horrible pass by Case Keenum in the waning moments of that game to a wide open Demaryius Thomas. So maybe, you know what, I'm going to immediately contradict myself and retract that comment. Yeah, I guess the Broncos defense is good enough where if you do have an average quarterback, you ought to be able to maybe win nine. Like, again, it's the Baltimore model. Win, get yourself 7 or 8 wins by week 14, and then see if you can get to 10 by week 17. I mean, the defense is that good. No question about it. I mean, when you've got Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, the center of that line is solid. Your linebackers are okay. That's probably a spot where you could upgrade a little bit. But Roby, if Harris is right, you got good corners. And Vic Fangio, we've seen what he was able to do with a very young, you know, Bears defense and turn them in. Granted, he needed Khalil Mack to take that next step, arguably the best pass rusher in the league. But, you know, he was able to do some great things on that side of the ball there, and he has his whole career. So why not? I mean, I get it. I think going in with the idea that's going to do more than just maybe get you to between 8 and 10 wins, I think having any grander designs than that is probably foolish in that division.
Well, that's why I say that
they draft the kid
as
well.
They're going to take another rookie to come. They're going to take a rookie to come in there. Other,
you know, would be the big mistake, by the way. Sorry to interrupt, but is if this is how we'll know whether or not he's you know, taking outside consult or if he is just putting his head down my way and I am the only one that has a say in this stuff, is if he takes an offensive tackle. You know, if he ends up taking, say, Jawan Taylor or Cody Ford or one of these guys, you know, in the first round with that pick. Now, look, if he wants to trade back, you know, because he feels like, you know, someone's going to come up and get a quarterback and I don't want it and this bounty is too good. I get a number one next year and a third this year to go back 10 spots. And, you know, then he takes the offensive lineman, say Andre Dillard, the kid out of Washington State that DJ, by the way, was first on a long time ago, and now everyone's trying to hitch their wagons to his horse, if that makes sense. I don't think it's
something
does.
Like that. Well, it's all horse-based like stuff. So,
right.
Yeah,
but Broncos. What I'm saying is if he does that, then I think that's the old John Elway that people can maybe be like, oh, boy, here we go again.
Hmm. By the way, Matt Money Smith reminds he and Daniel Jeremiah and everybody else getting out there for the combine in Indianapolis in the next week or so.
You just wanted to say combine. That's all you wanted to do there.
And then also, I didn't promote. Make sure you listen to Game Theory and Money here on NFL Media. And, of course,
I think we're done with that for a while.
Is that right? Then don't
look
for
it. I believe she is now, you know, she's working for the Alliance. And I am going to be doing some work for the Alliance here on NFL Network. But I believe she is currently building her model for Alliance football. So Game Theory and Money on hiatus until next year.
Oh, excuse me. I stand corrected. Well, if you're looking for more podcasting action, you should check out the Petros and Money Show, available all over the land. Doing very nicely, too, I understand, right? Or at least that's what you and Petros say when I hear the show.
I had probably my finest or my my most fun moment as a benefit of being a host of the Petros and Money Show yesterday.
I want to hear about this. Yes.
Yes, for the first time ever to play in a legitimate pro-am.
How awesome. And by the way, look at Matt Money Smith's Instagram account because the swing was out there. It wasn't a humble brag. I mean, your language was a humble brag about like, oh, I was lucky to be out there. And oh, I'm glad I didn't top this ball or whiff it or whatever.
But you could see what's going on around me. It was a very real possibility that you just swing and miss.
I hear you, but you didn't. And you posted the video. So I think, Spaghetti, you're the humble brag expert here. Is that was a humble brag that Money did?
No, I think
he just wanted everybody to see his nice swing.
I did play high school golf. Actually, I used to golf quite a bit. It's so nerve-wracking. Like, when you play in a competitive game and you have a bunch of other people you don't know staring at you, and it's like a ball, you can go to a driving green and a driving range and you could hit up 1,000 balls, wouldn't miss a thing, wouldn't top anything, and then you go to the course and there's a bunch of people watching you in a big event like Money was playing in, and you go and screw it up, and you're just like, wow. And
how big was the crowd there, Money?
I'd say there were probably around us, probably 40 to 60 people.
That's a lot of people staring.
And then you
down
got the guy, Kelly Jones, there doing his rap, and I'm the last guy. So Patrick Cantley's already driven the green. Yankees outfielder Aaron Hicks has hit an iron like 290 yards. Mike Moustakas has just bombed the drive, and I'm the last guy. I have to go last. I've got to follow these professional athletes. So yeah, it was like a. It really was. I truly did look at the Hyundai or the Genesis that was to the left of me, and I was like, if I snapped this hard enough, could I break a window? Like, that was my swing thought before I stepped into the tee box.
Oh, that stuff is legit the worst. Yeah, I was an alternate, little known fact, on my high school golf team, too. I played in one match. I played in one match, and yes, it's horrifying. Yeah, that repeat. Well, I mean, it's why field goal kickers miss in the clutch when they drill them all year long. The thing I can't imagine is golfers. I don't know. I guess repetition is what helps you overcome it. But if you're really good at golf and your first year on the tour, that has to be so jarring when those people are gathered, not just right behind you. Like, if you ever have a tree near you when you're swinging the club, like, I just don't feel right. I can't really cut it loose here. When there are human beings gathered around you and then 50 yards ahead, like, all I would think about is, like, one of you's catching this in the ear. Like, one of you's got to get, like, what? I don't think this is safe. They do that at pro-ams. It's like, you know, am means that we're not pros. Ergo, you shouldn't stand like 50 yards where the ball is 10 feet from where I mean for it to go. This ball could certainly hit you right in the forehead, fella.
That is when the whole positive swing thoughts, and which I have none of. I will never stand over a ball and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to flush this thing to within 3 feet. That is not what I think. It is always, I'm going to spray this right. I'm going to hook it left. I'm going to duff. You know, those are my swing thoughts. So, I probably could take you through every single swing of the round. For whatever reason, I have a good memory for rounds of golf. But on the third hole, my second shot, I hit a good drive, but it kind of just peeled off to the right a little bit. And there were a group of people standing up kind of halfway between the green and I. And I'm thinking, Why are you standing there? I have to hit it right over you. Now, granted, it's only about 140 yards away, so it should obviously be on a high trajectory going into the green. But still, I could cut into the middle of this ball and kill one of you. Please move, but you can't say that. And it's just, it's nerve-wracking. It really is.
Well, as we sit here in mid-February, a lot of people have golf on the brain. Have you ever, Money, what happens when the group behind you hits into you? How does Matt Money Smith handle that?
It depends. Usually if it happens once, no big deal. I just assume somebody, you know, hit the drive of their life and just, well, whatever, you know. But I have gotten into an argument with someone once in my life from hitting into me. I hit into a group twice and they yelled at me, and both times it was exactly that. I just bombed drives. And the reason I got into, not a physical altercation, but we were yelling at each other, was because it rolled up on them. They were probably, you know, it was probably a 20-yard roll, and it rolled up to where the person was hitting. It's like, hey, easy, okay? It landed.
You aren't going to get maimed, right?
Right. It's like it caught a little speed lane there and rolled up to you. Big deal, you know? Granted, it was the second time, but I caught a couple drives. You're 300 yards out. That's a rarity for me. But there was once when I was on a green and a par three, and I was walking off, and it was the second time it happened, and this dope behind me snapped his par three shot, and like it whizzed right over our heads and hit the bridge that we were crossing and rattled around. And I started screaming at him, and this guy's yelling about, why are you taking so long? And it turns out it was former UCLA quarterback Dennis Dummett, who I had not met yet at the place where I do all my golf. And he's a very nice guy. But yeah, like we were having it out right there on the 11th hole, because he, for the second time, like was in somehow, because that's what you do, right? You hit into someone if you feel like they're playing slow, but we're right behind the group in front of us. It's like,
if it's a par three, right?
Exactly. It's like, what do you want me to do? We're standing in the tee box waiting like you are. It's a slow day. And then I'm glad he did it, because when I mentioned it on the radio the other day, Petros's father, my radio partner, John Papadakis, who was an All-American linebacker at USC, mentioned in a game, I don't think it was him, it was one of his teammates, was so angry at Dummett, they played at the same time, that he bit him in the rear end so hard he drew blood in a pile. So we got that story out of it.
John Papadakis bit Dummett on the bum.
Right on the bum so hard that it drew blood and a big brawl broke out. And he's like, you know, that's the way that Petros' dad talks, his voice is just filled with
he's
violence.
The best.
And that's when football was football. And that's when the goal of a game was to prevent forward progress, not outscore your opponent. And yes, we bit him on his ass, and he deserved it.
That's great. That's, you know, my tip is for anybody, if, again, you let one go, but if it happens a second time,
right.
Me and my friends, Richie and Brett and Josh, we would do is you just hit it back at them. That's the good move.
Exactly.
That sends the message. You just
return
their ball to them. Lost your ball.
That's a very dangerous move.
I did once. I once jerked it so far off the green. They were at the in the tee box nearby. I jerked my second shot so badly that it hit the guy in the tee box after they left the hole. And by the time I got up there, he was like, "You hit my friend in the hand!" And he was running his hand under the water fountain. Like, that's I feel bad for your friend, but I don't think the water fountain's gonna fix it.
No, sorry. Clearly an accident. Because you were in the other tee box and I was going for the green here.
Yeah, I'm just bad. It wasn't intentional. I'm just terrible. Yeah. What do you want from me?
Exactly. I'm not sure what that happened there. So, yes, a couple times I have been involved in that.
Spaghetti was on the golf team or played a lot.
I was decent in the early part of high school, and then I don't like golf anymore as much because of whenever I played sports, I always thought I was I was competent. And some days in golf, when you have a bad day, and I'm sure you and Money could attest to this, you have a bad day in golf, you just can't shake it, and the rest of the day is just ruined, and I'm just frustrated, and that just made me go crazy.
I've never understood when people say, I love golf because it lets me get away. You know, like I don't have to worry about work or what's going on. Instead, you replace that worry with just a grieving anger and frustration. That's all it is. It's just, you know, it's the worst thing in the world. But Matt Money Schmidt does it 8 times a week. So yeah. I got to get back to it. It's the only sport I can play anymore. It occurred to me recently, I'm never going to play competitive basketball again. I've reached a station in my life. I'm never going to play a hardcore 3-on-3 game again.
I think you just created some DDFP offseason content. DDFP goes to the course. Hits the playground.
All right, I'd love to see that.
Emma, do you golf? We'll get Emma out there as well.
I don't, but I'll do it.
All right, whoever shoots a better score doesn't have to get a perm. You and Spaghetti.
Perfect. How often do you play competitive basketball, Dave? Like, were you doing it 3-on-3?
I used to do it all the time. Okay. I mean, this is now a decade ago, but I used to faithfully every weekend play 3-on-3 for hours on end.
All right, we'll get you back out there.
Nah, there you go. I can't do it.
I have the same response, by the way, because I do have friends that that were much more accomplished athletes than I were, and it's very easy to be a much more accomplished athlete than I was. But they played, you know, Division I sports in college, and they still keep it going. They play adult league soccer, they play adult league basketball, and they routinely invite me out, and I have the same stock answer, which is, I like my hamstrings, I'm not going to blow them, so I'm not coming to play your stupid games, because inevitably that's what always happens. And it happened to me, and I learned my lesson by playing adult league baseball, deciding to relive my high school glory in the Beverly Hills Adult Baseball League back in the day. And the first time I smacked a hit and sprinted to first base, I blew my hammy, because you don't fire your legs as an adult. And that's what happens when you're playing competitive sports. Instinctively, if you were ever an athlete, you fire your legs. And when they're not prepared to do that, you blow hamstrings. That's what happens.
Money knows. He has a mutual friend, Kevin Hench. He's a supreme athlete. And he's like, I got a new place. I got a court in the backyard. We got it for old time's sake. We got to get a couple games in. Let's get some runs in. I'm like, no, I will definitely rip my Achilles. That's what will happen. And to what end? This isn't a nostalgic tour. I like the idea of nostalgia, except when it causes severe bodily harm. Anyway, Money, before we let you go, and by the way, Stefan Diggs coming up as soon as Money and the rest of the gang and I finish up here. I want a great, and by the way, what a mensch this guy is. He's delightful. He's one of these guys that you want to believe populates all of stardom, whether it's show business or professional sports or music or whatever, these rare and kind of cool high paid jobs. Stefan Diggs, you really get the vibe off of him that he enjoys it and, you know, gets all the great stuff about it and isn't one to bellyache. In fact, wait till you hear his stuff. Maybe some high end wide receivers who are looking to get traded right now could learn a thing or two about that. He's like, I don't care. Yeah, no, Thielen gets more power. That's cool with me. I don't care. Whatever. Did we win? Yeah, it's fun. Oh, yeah, that's my guy. He's just a super sunny disposition. Anyway, speaking
who are
of
who are these high-end receivers you speak of?
Well, I hear...
Are you speaking in general, or you have someone specific in mind?
I mean, yeah, I'm just talking about the notion of the prima donna wide receiver, but as it happens, Eddie Spaghetti whispered in my ear on my way into the studio, what about Odell Beckham maybe getting traded? And then for some reason he has on the rundown here, Odell Beckham rumors... up again, who's worth more, AB or Odell? What does that mean, Spaghetti?
I'm not trying to throw him under the bus here, but our rundown is a group effort. That added-on question was not
well,
from
oh,
me.
So that means you don't think it was a good question.
Yeah, sorry.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Sorry for putting that on there, guys. It's a national conversation, but... don't answer that one.
I will say this to stick up for Emma's point.
Stick up for you?
I think if you're a franchise trading for one of these guys, the obvious answer is Odell Beckham. In terms of what you can get next season, maybe want, like if Antonio Brown goes to the Colts, I could see him putting up monster numbers better than Odell Beckham, just because the Giants are more of a run-based team now anyway, and Saquon and Ingram and Shepard steal those targets from him. So I could see that for a one-year, maybe two-year basis. Yeah, that could be better.
Oh, are you down for that noise then, Spaghetti? Moving Odell.
No, not in the least. I think it's awful. I'm glad last year that Gettleman ended it and said, like, we did not sign him to trade him. And now Jay Glazer, you know, answered some mailbag question in his article and started up this whole new rumor thing again. And Odell to the Browns has been like what people have been saying. I don't want this at all. It doesn't make any sense. I thought Odell actually was happy, like, going into this offseason, seeing that there might be a new quarterback and Saquon winning Rookie of the Year. He feels more confident. the last thing I want is to move him.
The bigger thing you got to do is move on from 10, as I keep telling you. Just get start anew with Haskins. It'll be a good new energy. Don't try and hold on to what happened 6, 7, 8 years ago. Money, what do you think? Odell Beckham, any truth to this? Any chance that Odell Beckham is not playing for the Giants?
I would like to point out for a topic that Eddie was quick to poo-poo and wanted no credit for. He did a three to five minute bit of analysis on the multi facets available in this one question that was submitted by MVP.
Maybe that's how we settle who has to get a perm. Is Money and Handsome Hank and I will keep separate tabulations like boxing judges, and we'll reveal our cards. Like, well, that's one strike against spaghetti, and we'll just whoever has the most strikes has to get a perm.
I just didn't want to. It's not my style to throw him under the bus, so I was sticking up for her addition.
But you did.
What?
Who would have known if you didn't mention it?
You immediately threw under the bus, and then you went on to answer the question.
I was clarifying
3 minutes of analysis.
I clarified the rundown topic and just said that was not my half of it, but I could understand why Emma put that in the rundown.
But see, Eddie, this is why you get two strikes now, because it's not your half of the rundown or her half of the rundown. It's the Tuzayu's rundown, and you own
very
it
true.
In, together. And you never acknowledge who is responsible for what. You accept the great and the not so great, in your opinion, as one.
You're right. Team first. You're right.
Exactly right. No wonder you played golf, you individual.
This rundown is going to come and go, but permanents are permanent. You understand, Spaghetti?
Exactly right.
I want you to think about that as we go forward here. So do you think AB's getting moved, right, Money? Do you think there's any way? I mean, the math does get wonky
for
the Steelers side. It does, but the nonsense that – I mean, I'm not going to make comparisons to any other people in our society right now, but this changing things after you, the reason people want you, Antonio Brown, is because you're under their control contractually. But if I get traded, I want a new deal. What?
Yes.
What is it? How can we make a trade for you then?
I don't see them. It goes back. I think we had this conversation last week. I don't see them waiving him at all. I think there's zero chance of that. And I don't know who wants to trade for someone who clearly is A, disgruntled, and B, disillusioned, right? Has delusions of grandeur. Like, where do you think you're going to go that is going to be a better situation for you than the Steelers? And if you aren't able to, and I guess the one thing that you could say in Antonio's defense, and I know you won't appreciate that, but there is a ridiculous amount of drama in that locker room. And maybe if you get him to a place that is more structured and more disciplined, he would be a different player off the field. I have nothing to prove that, but it certainly seems like with the drama provided by Ben, by Le'Veon, by Antonio, your three, highest profile players, that there are some issues there that for whatever reason, aren't under control. And I don't know whose fault that is, if it's the individuals themselves or if it's an issue with the hierarchy and the structure of that team that maybe a team could talk themselves into. Well, I mean, look, you can see it's happening all over with all those guys out there. So we trade for Antonio, and I'm sure he'll be fine.
That's right. It always goes back to what Bucky Brooks taught us many moons ago. There's always going to be someone with the ego, a GM or a coach or whatever. It's like, we can fix this. We can make this right. I believe that can happen. But if the assumption is that we have to blow up the existing contract, is what?
That doesn't make sense.
It's very weird. So I guess we'll have to wait and see for another month what happens with AB. But I will say in the meantime, it's very exciting seeing all these trades and all the rumors and stuff. It keeps pro football vital through the 12 months of the year.
I think legitimate free agents too, by the way. Like, oftentimes free agents don't necessarily have, serious impact on a team's success or failure, but I think there's enough teams that are one or two players away, impact players, specifically on defense. I just think you add like either an Anthony Barr or an Earl Thomas to the Chargers, and that changes things dramatically for what, Gus Bradley is able to do with that defense. And I think there's a number of teams that, you could kind of suggest as much. Not the same with the Chiefs. I mean, if the Chiefs were to go out and sign Earl Thomas, or, you know, a top tier. Let's say they decide to take a flyer on Jason Verrett and he is healthy, and now you've got him in your secondary with that pass rush. I mean, I think you could really see same thing with the Packers. Teams make big jumps based on what's available to them in free agency this year.
Yeah, I hear you. If you do just from the fantasy standpoint, not chemistry or anything else, you start plugging 84 into almost any roster and start imagining what that could do for your over. I mean, you put him on the Colts, yikes. But I just don't think Chris Ballard, based on what that seems like the year one of Ballard and Reich regime, I don't think they're going after Bell or AB. But we'll wait and see with all that stuff. It's reckless speculation. The one thing nobody's really talking about money since we had our conversation a week ago. It's very weird what's going on with Todd Gurley. Complete silence. So he wasn't hurt? Then what happened there? Todd Gurley's just fine. He's one of the superstars in the NFL. I know he's already made his money, but it's very strange to me that this is not a point of discussion ongoing right now. Like, wait, so
I think it's
so
it's
what
great.
Happened there, man? The fat guy who wasn't on a team 2 weeks ago? Yeah, we're going to give him equal carries, if not more, than you. The greatest home run hitter in pro football right now. What?
It is a great observation, and I hate taking shots at the LA media, but you have to. Because the people that cover the Rams, for shame, they are too busy sticking up for the LA fans and how much they love the Rams and the ratings on TV and what is the total number versus what is the actual rating and how dare you say there were more Cowboys fans in the Coliseum than Rams fans. That's not your job. Nobody cares about that. That's social. That's Twitter. You know,
that's propaganda, right?
Yes. What you need to do is figure out and put Sean McVay's feet to the coals and say, direct question, was Todd Gurley hurt? No. Then why is he not carrying the ball? Why is last year's offensive player of the year and someone who had more touchdowns, even though he was missing four games, not touching the ball more than any other player on your roster? Well, you know, what we want to do is separate those. No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works anywhere, where a guy that was not on an NFL roster for four straight weeks before joining your team because of somebody's injury gets more carries than a guy in the Super Bowl. That doesn't work that way. So I think you're absolutely right. It was the media's responsibility to make that the number one story coming out of the Super Bowl, as opposed to what the ratings were in L.A. and how few jerseys were in the stadium in Atlanta compared to Patriot fans. And instead, they decided to latch onto that and freaking defend their franchise that they cover. It was stupid.
It's really weird. It really is bizarre. Anyway, you know what, Matt Money Smith, you have important matters to tend to, like the aforementioned radio show, your children not shopping for Valentine's Day, and instead maintaining your own dignity. All those reasons. We'll let you go now. Appreciate it. Next time, we must do a good True Detective discussion here. What's going on?
Oh, for certain.
What a season! It's back.
Well, next week we'll have but one episode left, and I can only imagine the penultimate episode will be full of a ton of new developments, because the final episode just has to be peak action, right? Like, this is.
I don't know. I will say I didn't love, and I don't want to go down the rabbit hole now, but I will say it was a grave disappointment, however many years ago that was, 3 years. I loved Rust Cole. I loved that whole thing. And the way it resolved with him basically, having a spiritual awakening, I was like, I know it would have been easier for the writer to have killed him. That's the easier conclusion to come to. I don't know. It just mimicked too much of Silence of the Lambs and all that stuff towards the end.
That's fair.
But this is very exciting. Everybody get caught up in time to listen to Matt Money Smith, Eddie Spaghetti, and me break this one down. You're not a viewer, right, MVP?
I am, but I need to get caught up. I'll get caught up by then.
I'm a few behind. The reason I'm anxious to do it is because now I'm fully all caught up as of late last night. All right. Thanks so much, Matt Money Smith. Make sure you check him out. Petros and Money. Track it down in Los Angeles, AM 570. Otherwise, iHeartRadio on the app. Listen to the show. You'll laugh. You won't cry, but you'll laugh when you hear John Papadakis tell some good stories about guys biting on the butt.
Bums.
Stuff like that. Hey, happy not celebrating Valentine's Day to you, Matt Money Smith. We'll talk to you soon.
You as well. Thanks so much.
There he goes, Matt Money Smith, golfer supreme. Nice, look at him on Instagram. Nice, easy stroke there, right, Spaghetti? Did you admire it?
I'm shocked when Money said that he doesn't like playing sports. I could see him being a guy that seems active.
On.
He plays the golf.
That's Money's bit. The whole life is a humble brag.
I'm
good at golf. I'm a legend on local radio. Right. Come on.
I thought that he'd be a guy that would play like some pickup leagues or whatever. Like you said, he golfs frequently. I could see him being more of an athletic adult than most.
What I didn't care for, and I just want to make it clear, I didn't miss the shot. Speaking of playing basketball, MVP took a shot, but it wasn't a set shot. It wasn't a three-pointer. No, this one hit right between the eyes, MVP.
Mm-hmm.
You think I'm incapable of playing ball? Well, now kinda. I am, but I used to be good at playing ball.
I can't
ball.
Picture
Not
it.
Not good.
Sorry.
I don't know what that's supposed to even – can't picture it.
Can't picture it.
A man of my carriage, I understand, as you see me in 2019, yeah, it might seem a little silly, but, you know, a couple of years ago, I was fine. I wasn't, you know.
A couple?
All right. Dozen or so, something like that.
I'm sure you're
Is
great.
That surprise you, Spaghetti?
I'll hand up. Me and him were both very shocked that you played basketball that frequently.
What the hell?
Who was league? Like, it was like you and Corolla. I know he talked about playing with you a bunch. Like, what did that league look like?
I'm not here to explain myself to you. What are you talking about? I am the slowest coordinated person I've ever known, but that doesn't mean I'm completely incapable.
Have you ever
seen me unleash?
I have, and I've seen your shot too outside over here. It's a good
All right,
shot.
So
it's
then what else
shot.
Do you need to know?
You're like Klay Thompson. You don't dribble. You just stand in the corner, wait for the ball to come, knock down the three.
That you're about to find out what else I can do. I'm no stranger to the fisticuffs. You're going to be on the wrong end of that, friend, when we finish up. All right. Now let's hear from number 14 of the Minnesota Vikings, shall we? A delightful fellow, like I said already. We get into all of it. What happened with Kirk Cousins, the tumult towards the end of the year with Adam Thielen. And as you'll hear here, it's all sunshine and rainbows where Stephon Diggs, and that's, by the way, not me being cynical. I sincerely mean that. He's a delight who probably greases the skids for that offense to roll into 2019. They're likely will not be controversy because of his attitude in large part as a bona fide superstar in pro football. Here he is, everybody. It's Stephon Diggs.
You're listening to Dave Damashek. You're listening to Dave Damashek. You're listening to Dave Damashek.
All right, look who it is, everybody, from the Minnesota Vikings, the big hero, one of the great plays of the Super Bowl era. It's simple as that. When they In 50 years, when they have the reel of the greatest plays in pro football history, this will be among it. The guy who authored that play, number 14 from the Minnesota Vikings, Stephon Diggs. What's happening, fella?
I'm just hanging out. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Let's start off. I saw you at the same steakhouse last night. How was your experience?
I didn't know you were creeping on me, but
I was following you. But you know why? Because that's what. Someone in my position who's willing to go the extra mile.
There we go.
I had to get to know Diggs the man without, you know, so I could be fully prepared for this conversation right now.
I can appreciate that.
Yes. You know. Was it too much when I reached over and took a bite of your steak?
Yeah, I was going to call what they should have had security on you.
Well, I didn't know. Yeah, it was you played it real cool, you know, and I appreciate that, that I didn't wind up in handcuffs. But tell us about, as we talk food and related drink,
yes.
You're excited about Teavana and Starbucks.
Yes. For me, it's huge. You know, I love Starbucks. You know, I've been loving Starbucks for a very, very long time. And I was looking forward to this partnership just because you get to do something that you love. And I love the teas. So actually my favorite right now is Mango Black. You might want to check it out, you know.
I will. You know what I've only recently discovered in my life as a grown-up is tea. I like a nice tea, and I like a nice iced tea.
There we go.
And I like there to have go. A green tea sometimes, and I actually go to the store.
Teavana has everything for your needs, I would say. If you like green tea or you like black tea or mango, a little mixture of both. They have it over there. They'll make it happen.
I like a nice English breakfast sometimes, you know?
For me, I'm a fatty guy. I like the whole eggs, bacon, and then my tea.
If we're going to talk breakfast fare, let's do it. I haven't thought about this in a while. Favorite breakfast meat?
It gets a bad rap. because they say it's bad for you, but it's so good. Bacon.
I mean, okay, that's a good answer, but what really has come along in the last decade or so is the notion of thick-cut bacon, you know? They didn't do that when I was growing up, but now, like, you're a lousy breakfast joint if an option isn't thick-cut bacon.
Yeah, because, like, it's all about evolving, I would say. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
That's right. It's
my era. It's my era of thick-cut bacon. You had the old bacon, you know? You had your time, though.
Speaking of evolution, I'm pleased to see that in the 21st century, the NFL has finally loosened up on what numbers receivers are allowed to wear. Mm-hmm. But I'm struck by the number 14. That's a weird one for a wide receiver. Man. Like 11 is kind of cool. 10 is good. But 14, where'd that come from?
There's a story behind it. I think there were like 14 receivers taken before me. And it was 14 was another thing for my dad. You know, my dad passed away when I was 14. So it was another way. And at the combine, I think I wore something close to that too. So 14 came around a lot. And out of the numbers, they were either 14 or like 89 or like 83, and 14 seemed the most like it was.
Yeah, 89's a crummy receiver number. Yeah, those teen digits are good. The next era is like when you get to be a one.
A single digit?
That'd be cool.
Then you're the man.
Maybe you could talk to Treadwell and say, give me the 11, because the 11's kind of cool too.
You got to negotiate the 11. People don't want to just easily give that up.
Well, listen, at this point, what's done is done. Although Kobe and guys like that have changed their number mid-season, mid-career. But if you stick with the 14, you're in good shape. In fact, though, I feel like it has a weird – I don't know if you're a sports historian, but
– A little bit.
I don't want to make you feel bad, but that number isn't exactly a great number because Dan Fouts is a Hall of Famer, but he didn't go to a Super Bowl. Pete Rose, you heard about him. He had gotten into trouble.
Yeah.
Like Andy Dalton.
Did anybody good wear 14?
Well, I just said Andy Dalton. Stephon Diggs wears it. That makes it good. Let's talk about what it's like. So everybody all through the 2018 season was saying, best pair of receivers in pro football, Diggs and Thielen, Thielen and Diggs.
Yeah.
Do you, first of all, agree with that assessment?
It's kind of hard. It's not hard for me to say, actually. I was going to say it's kind of hard for me to say, but it's not at all.
No. Well, you don't jive me or yourself. Admit it.
I usually leave it up for interpretation, you know. It's usually fan favorites, too. You know, you're going to be a fan of us or anybody else. You know, I don't speak on anybody else's names. But for us, we go back and forth each and every day about it. You know, not more so about being the best duo, but more so individually being the best you can be and kind of meet in the middle that way.
Well, it's funny because I've talked with Reggie Wayne, who was a part of one half of a great duo with Marvin Harrison, and how that impacts, for instance, Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster and the dynamic of that. And it does seem like that there can be legitimate issues that spin off of that. You witness what's going on with Antonio Brown. You wonder if part of that has to do with jealousy, if that's what what that is. How do you tamp down when Thielen is on that historic run of 100-yard games and everything? And listen, it's not because you're here and Thielen isn't. I see. Yeah. I see who's drawing the double coverage. I see who's dropping the top cover corner.
Okay,
how do you resist the urge to be like, hey, everybody, did you see who was matched up with me? How do you let that go and just be about like, hey, I'm glad we're doing well?
Yeah. And for me, since I've been in the league, I've always been a team guy. I've always been what's best for the team. And, you know, at times, I get a lot of attention. And from the attention, I call it respect. You know, I get a lot of respect. I remember we played Seattle. I got, like, triple team one time. And I've never experienced nothing like it. But I know if I'm getting triple team, somebody's open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I kind of keep that team first mindset. And, you know, my guy's going to eat. You know, you leave him out there by himself with anybody, he's going to eat. So, I don't mind taking the backseat for team success. You know,
that's interesting. And like I say, I'm not calling anyone out by name, but some guys don't like that. You know,
I understand. It's kind of hard because.
Do you say to him like, just so you understand? You understand.
Yeah. I'm
glad for you and your 100-yard. But you understand that wouldn't happen.
I'm
14 here.
I couldn't be that guy because, you know, I push for guys genuinely because I feel like if. you do that or like you want more for yourself and want another guy's situation, you'll block your own blessings. And God got a blessing with my name on it. I'll just get it when I get it.
Well, that's a great philosophy, yeah. And I'd like you to address other receivers in the league, and perhaps you can share that love.
It happens because I just, you know, different situations, different teams, you just never know all the pieces, the little pieces. I don't know. You know, if it is, it is. If it isn't, it isn't. But, you know, I hope things get better over there.
An admirable point of view. Yeah. Now, speaking of well wishes for other teams, do you feel bad for the Saints? Last year you do what you do to them, and then this year they go out in the fashion they did. What gives with these Saints? And is that a weird message that we should read into it, that they're named the Saints, and yet they keep getting wronged? What are we supposed to glean from all of that?
I will learn, mostly because some bad things have happened over a period of time. Why? Nobody will ever say why, but I think it's a mixture of, you know, karmatic energy.
All right, well, what happened?
I don't know.
Oh,
I've heard. I've heard some bad things.
Some stories from like 10 years or so.
Yeah, I've heard some bad things. So I don't know what
it is. It could be. That's a good theory.
I believe in karmatic energy. I believe in good things happen. I believe things coming back around. But they're gonna get over the hump. They're a great team. You know, that was a very questionable non-call. You know.
I agree. I don't feel so bad for them though. Because I've watched other teams lose to them on bad calls this year. So I don't feel too bad for them.
100% agree.
On that count. You have that catch, and I'm sure you're already have spoken five lifetimes on that catch on that moment.
Not enough.
You love – well, what does that feel like to know? It's hard to be – lucid about what that the significance of that moment it feels like, but do you have a sense of that is going to live beyond me, I will eternally, among football fans at minimum, everyone will see that play. Is there anything you would like to change about what pose you struck in the end zone? Do you wish you hadn't looked back? Is there anything you could have done differently? Because what's done is done. It's on tape, and now we're going to watch it forever.
Not really. Not at all, actually. It was a perfect moment. It was organic. I've never been a part of anything like that. And it's more so a moment like not just Minnesota fans or anybody, but football fans in general. If you like football and you watching football, it was like one of those like gladiator endings, like things that don't happen, but you made it out on top at the end kind of thing. So, yeah.
I mean, it really, immaculate reception in Three River Stadium in 72. And pretty much after that, I think it's like the Diggs catch. Did you like the name that they gave it? It was kind of Minnesota Miracle.
Yeah, it was just crazy. It was kind of like in the moment. And, you know, he said it like, oh, Minnesota's going to need a miracle right now. And it's going to be like, then it just happened.
Let's talk quickly 2019.
Yes, sir.
Actually, 2018, you heard it all, especially in November and December as the season was winding down there, and you guys were kind of tracking in the right direction. I talked to Kyle Rudolph around that time, and he said, you know, things are starting to come together, and then it kind of felt like it went the other way,
exactly.
As a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. How did it go down? I mean, you were probably standing right there, the Thielen and Cousins back and forth on the sideline. By the way, did you jump in?
Crazy.
Were you a peacemaker?
If you watch it, like, I was in the middle of talking to Coach, and the moment I kind of got over there, it was kind of over. And I was like, what happened? Anything happen? It was like, it's not. They were just talking. But everybody was right there when they were talking, so it was like, it wasn't like the usual. When they get talking, nobody says anything, so... I kind of just watched it afterwards. I didn't know all that took place. I don't know. I didn't even know what was really said.
Did you, like, in the locker room, like, Kirk, is there something you'd like to say to Adam? I'd like you to shake hands
hug
and
makeup,
apologize.
Hug
that
makeup.
Seems like the kind of guy you are, that you would do something
Me?
Like that.
I'm more the opposite of a peacemaker. I will make things worse.
Let's get in a circle around Kirk and Adam, and they fight until it's done with. No. Let them go. Let them go. This all has to play itself out.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. What needs to happen in 2019? What piece would you like to see added? Pieces, free agency, draft, otherwise?
You know, I really trust our guys. Every year we've gotten pieces that's going to help us. You know, we went and got Kirk, you know, as far as like, we went and got Sheldon Richardson, guys like that. And I feel like they're going to add it. They're going to add a bunch of more pieces this offseason, just as far as like going into the new year. Because, you know, we all got goals. You know, we want to win it every year, you know what I'm saying? But it's going to take one game at a time. So I look forward to whatever we get.
You get Dalvin rolling with you guys. If you guys can bring that together, it seems like you'll be just about unstoppable. Yeah. The question that people were throwing out there rhetorically towards the end of the season, can Kirk Cousins win the Super Bowl? After a season with him, do you buy him as a guy who can go the distance?
I'm 100% with him. I believe he can win just because he has a winner mentality. He has a winner mindset, and he got winners around him. You know, it's gonna be huge to add a couple more pieces, but he has everything that he needs as far as, you know, we have the talent on the offense, and we have the guys that want to win. We have good character guys that work hard. So we got a foundation built. We just got to build off it.
Well, I lament for you and everybody up in Minnesota that you guys didn't get to play a home game last year in the Super Bowl, but we look forward to seeing you. By the way, one last thing.
Yeah.
Tell whoever, get the dome off of that thing. Don't you see the home field advantage you would have?
I know. That's.
I don't get you guys in the Lions. I say it all the time. Why dome the stadium and remove the home? I know you don't want to be outside.
Nobody wants to be outside.
Well, but it's a home. The road team will like it less than you.
Listen. It's -50 out there right now.
I get it. So what? Wouldn't it be great if there were a playoff game right now, -50?
It's a disadvantage for both.
It'd be a home field advantage for you. But all right, you go.
I'll talk to them about it, though.
If they won't do that, at least have them get rid of the black face mask.
Or the gray.
You're a man of style. That's easy to see. I want you to do the white or the gray face mask, and we'll call it a wrap.
I got you. Deal.
Okay. And then also, I mean, the 14. It's too late. We're just going to stay with 14. All right. There he is, everybody. Stephon Diggs, one of the more likable guys in pro football. You're listening to
Dave Damashek. All right, so that's that. Good guy, like I said, Eddie Spaghetti, MVP. We will continue to keep our individual scorecards and see who has to get a permanent. I don't know when that's going to be. Maybe for like April Fool's Day. That seems appropriate to have to get a perm on that date.
I think so.
All right. Well, we'll play that by ear. In the meantime, we'll be back to keep getting you ready for the draft and free agency and everything else. Football season never ends. Neither does the game of life. We've got it all covered for you. Until next time, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.